ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just one day after Jack McLennan's relationship fell apart, he vanished.
I couldn't believe this was happening.
Immediately, accusations started flying.
You need to cough up and you need to confess.
But it soon became clear there was so much more to the story.
There has to be something more nefarious going on.
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
You know where my son is.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, here we are, Jerry. Is the US wobbling on AUKUS?
Or maybe we're the ones wobbling.
We're now only getting second-hand subs from the Americans, and that's leading to louder calls here for a plan B.
On this episode, Australia's AUKUS architect, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison. I'm Geraldine Doogue.
And I'm Hamish McDonald. This is Global Roaming. Well, we've been talking about whether Australia would actually debate AUKUS, and maybe now is the moment, and maybe it's come about because of the Americans, not because of us.
Yes. I mean, that's what I think we did talk about. And I have heard talk that, in fact, Labor's hoping that it's the Americans who cool on it. And I do think that these changes that we heard announced by Defence Minister Richard Marles, along with the Minister for War, Peter Hegseth, at the Shangri-La Dialogue, are probably a result of the Elbridge-Colby review. He's that leading Pentagon man who was sent in to do an overview of whether the Americans were keeping up with their own schedule, and it would appear they're not.
And he publicly had been sceptical of AUKUS.
He had indeed.
The findings of the review were never made public, but the speculation is that he had recommended to the Trump administration, look, you do need to make an adjustment here because you're not building the submarines fast enough, and give them three used instead of two used and one new of the Virginia class. For those of you that sort of need a quick refresher on AUKUS, that's the first phase of this. Then we would get the AUKUS class submarine, which would be co-designed, co-built with the British, but in Australia. But that's the sort of longer term delivery. These Virginia class submarines would start to come online from 2032.
Yes, that's the point. And the thing to understand is that these Virginia class, second hand Virginia class submarines, have a life of their essential core, which is 33 years.
Yeah.
So what becomes important, I mean, we're now discovering, is that it is important that we know how old are these ones that we're getting. Because if we're getting them and they've got 15 years left, well, that's one argument. If we're getting them and they've got 8 years left, which is not ridiculous to suggest,
although
that's another argument altogether.
I was reading the transcripts from the Senate hearings overnight here in Australia, and the new Defence Department head did give advice that they would be relatively new in their life cycle. What we can believe from that or take from that, I'm not sure.
Relatively new, you see? I mean, I don't know what that means. And I think I've got every right. You know, I'm not an untrusting person, Hamish, but I just don't know what is happening here. And I noted that, there is that sense to me, and this is what we will put to our guest, the former Prime Minister, that the deal is, as we knew it, is unravelling. I think that is a completely legitimate conclusion to draw. Now, what are the implications of that?
Well, I mean, I think we have to be open to whether that is the case. I'm not sure I've seen enough evidence yet to say conclusively it is. But I think just one other detail I want to insert before we get to Scott Morrison. The current building capacity in the United States in the submarine dockyards is 1.3 attack boats per year. It needs to be at 2.33 attack boats per year. So they're way off that to deliver even on the current basis of delivering these secondhand submarines, as I understand it. So we are in a difficult situation, particularly if, as Ed Husic says, we're not really even having the conversation about Plan B.
Well, also to be, you know, it is interesting that the Australian Parliament has been remarkably lacking in curiosity about this. Like, I thought that Richard Marles would come back from Singapore and would say in Singapore, I'll be making a full statement to Parliament, but he didn't, and we haven't heard
and
anything.
Look, I think a lot of people have wanted to know what Scott Morrison thinks about this. Of course, the original architect of this, he is our guest. Let's go to him now.
Scott Morrison, welcome to Global Roaming.
Well, it's nice to be back.
Now, you were the man who started Australia off on this AUKUS pathway. Do you assess that now, with the conundrums around it, it's time to ditch it or start again, start over?
Absolutely not. Nothing has changed about the reasons why we need it and the challenges that were always there to achieve it. And we should press on. And it's absolutely essential for Australia's secure future.
Is there any other way, though, to interpret what's just happened in the last week other than that the Americans can't deliver on the deal as it was conceived?
Well, what has happened in the last week is not news. The fact that the Americans have had a challenge on their outturn rate on nuclear-powered submarines has been an issue that's been around for a decade. And partly as a function of the deindustrialisation of the US. It's partly a function of a sort of a peacetime dividend, a post-Cold War, et cetera. And that has been a known element for some time. And I wouldn't interpret the announcement on the weekend as being related to that fact. I think there's a lot of sense in this notion that you have three like assets, i.e. midlife assets, which have a similar... it's a similar platform, similar maintenance, similar crewing requirements and maintenance and so on. I mean, this is, I think, is simplifying the operationalization of AUKUS. And I haven't seen the detail, but, you know, subject to that, I think it's a common sense decision.
But we have been told time and time again that the issues with the production rate in the US are just not a problem. Whether it's Australian politicians or the likes of Tim Kaine, Senator Tim Kaine, they've stood here in this studio and told us.
Well, I don't think it's not a problem. I think it's a problem. I think it always has been a problem, but it's a problem that can be overcome and it's a problem that can be mitigated. And how can that happen? Well, of course, the United States has it in their interest to increase the outturn rate of those nuclear-propelled nuclear submarines. But that's why the Henderson project is so important. That's why our investment in the US industrial base as part of AUKUS is so important. So, you know, you can mitigate it by increasing the outturn rate, but you can also mitigate it by improving your maintenance arrangements and the facilities where you can do that, which is why Henderson is important. So I think, look, I've been told plenty of times too that AUKUS was dead tomorrow. I mean, apparently it was going to fall over when we left, then it was going to fall over when Keir Starmer was elected, then it was going to fall over when Donald Trump was elected, and then it was going to fall over because Bridge Colby wrote a report. And I said all along, no, there is deep support for this across all these jurisdictions for the right reason. And that remains the case. So the rehearsing again of issues that are known, I think you've got to put them in context.
We didn't know about a third used boat, did we? We really didn't know that. And imagine if you were sort of, you know, you're buying a car. You certainly don't change from a new car to a used car without a great deal of thought.
Well, you're assuming there hasn't been a great deal of thought. And I don't think that's the case. I think the thing about AUKUS is it's a dynamic arrangement. And the parties, and I know the parties well who are involved in the delivery of this in the United States, in the UK, and of course here. And when there's a better way to ensure that you can crew these subs and get them out there and get them in the water, and if that can be done more simply by having three platforms that are the same as opposed to one new one and two midlife ones, then that does make sense.
But if that's the case now, wasn't it always the case? Why wasn't that the optimal pathway from the outset?
Well, I think they're things only the government really can answer. I wasn't part of those discussions at the time. What our framework put together enabled them to find the best way forward with the pathway program that we initiated. And that led to the announcement in San Diego of the Virginia class. And now they've come to a view that the better way forward is to do that with three midlife
platforms. But some of this stuff you must have given thought to, right? So at its conception, what did you have in mind?
Well, the primary issue when we put AUKUS together was firstly to ensure that we could have access to the nuclear-powered submarine technology. And let's not forget, the only other time that was provided by the United States to any other country was in the 1950s. And it wasn't because no one asked. Plenty of people asked. And the Americans said no, time and again. So the fact that we were able to get ourselves in a situation where we'd built up the trust and the capability to be given approval to access that through an arrangement we would have with the United Kingdom to do the SSN AUKUS. And then the Pathway Program, President Biden's team was keen to ensure that there was the possibility of a US boat that was part of that arrangement. And we agreed to that. And that's why the Pathway was done after that to make that assessment. And then the announcement in San Diego followed. So I wouldn't agree with the assessment that a change from 2+1 to 3 of a same stage really represents anything other than, I think, a pragmatic and sensible judgment about the, what is the best way to go forward at this juncture.
But my sense is the people that are paying for this, that's the taxpayers of Australia, the people listening to this program, can also see that subsequent to those decisions, we made offers of money to support their shipbuilding capacity on the basis of our expectation we were going to get a new submarine. So we've put, what, $3 billion in already?
That's where I disagree.
Bit do you disagree with?
What I disagree with is the idea that one be new or they all be three of midlife is an operational decision around what is the best way to deliver this capability.
But we've never heard, you must admit, that hasn't popped up in all the coverage. It just hasn't.
Well, these programs change. I mean, times change.
Well, you could have said that, couldn't you? Said, look, we don't know exactly. It'll be dynamic. I don't remember you using that word.
That's exactly what I said.
Did you?
Which is why we actually didn't commit to specific assets at the time of making the announcement on AUKUS. We said that an AUKUS boat, the potential for others, and we needed to spend 18 months, which looked at these issues in great detail and the costings. And that's what happened after September of 2021. And that's what followed through with the new government when they committed to those new arrangements. Now, they were party to those final decisions about 2+1. But all I'm saying is I can see the common sense in adjusting that to go to three boats of the same life, which have all the same maintenance requirements, sustainment, crewing, training, all of that, rather than having to operate yet another, even if it's a variation to a platform. So all I'm simply saying, I mean, I've got, no one is going to accuse me of some political bias for the Labor government in Australia. But what I am saying is that I can actually quite objectively see the reasoning as to why they would do that. And I think the concerns about it are overstated.
I wonder, though, whether we're all circling around the same idea, which is that the public has never really known exactly what it's getting for this extraordinary amount of money, that there's been such ambiguity and flexibility around what can or would be delivered. And I think maybe the public at the moment is grappling with, well, how do we judge whether this is value for money, given that America can suddenly turn around and we think, say to us, oh, let's adjust this and let's not give you the new one.
What I'm arguing, and what I can see is happening, is this is a simpler way to actually deliver what Australia needs.
You think this is ideal, do you?
I haven't seen all the details, so it's I can't offer that, you know, absolute judgment. I'm not in the government. But what I can see from my experience is I can see why such a decision would make sense. And if that improves the ability to deliver this. And what are we seeking to deliver? That's your question. Well, there would be three nuclear-powered submarines, not nuclear-armed, of course, which would be available in the 2030s, which provides the bridge to the SSN AUKUS submarines, which would be delivered post-2040s, which would give Australia the apex submarine capability, or in fact, defence capability in the world. And for a country that has to extend its reach over long distances and remain submersed and undetected for extensive period of times to deliver on the missions that such submarines are tasked with, you cannot think that you're going to do that with diesel-powered submarines in the mid-2030s and certainly not the 2040s. So what Australia is investing in is a long-term capability which not only enables Australia to do that, but it enables Australia to plug in a network of even more elaborate capabilities with our allies in the United States in particular, which is what the guarantee of our security in the Indo-Pacific is. You know, if we think that Australia's security can be enabled in isolation to an alliance partnership with the United States, You're kidding yourself.
But that does.
You are delusional.
But we don't have to surely sign up for this in order to keep a very good alliance relationship with the United States.
That's not my point. My point is, if you are going to be an alliance that is going to be productive, you can't be a passive partner. Alliances are not, you know, you have to contribute. You've got to be engaged and
but
you've got to be at the table.
You look after number one, but you look after your own sovereignty, don't you?
Of course you do. And what's the suggestion that any of that is compromised?
Well, I think they've got a very good deal out of this. They've got they've effectively got a base. They've got a dockyard, and they've got money put into their ship, and we probably will put in more. I mean, I think they do, and they can change.
And what does Australia
arrangements?
Get?
Well, I think we could spend our money better.
How would it produce a better security outcome from Australia in the Indo-Pacific theatre?
Oh, I think there's lots of thoughts about that. Drone, much more uncrewed
vessels. So a drone
is a
substitute for a nuclear-powered submarine?
Possibly where we are. Well, we had Peter Varghese on here.
I'm sorry, I don't agree with Peter.
Okay, well, he had a very strong view that forward defence is out the window now. That is not where we need to be. And he argues the case, as you know, the usual suspect either, I don't think, Scott.
Well, I'm not sure about that. But AUKUS plus is what we've always argued, not AUKUS instead. And so the suggestion that you have nuclear-powered submarines and not have drones, well, no one sensible is suggesting that. We certainly never suggested that. Ghost Shark, which is being developed officially under sort of the AUKUS platform, that was initiated by our government. So was Ghostbat. And these are important technologies, advanced defence technologies and world-leading ones. And so it's not an either-or between drones and nuclear-powered submarines. If you want to have the ability to extend with a very sophisticated platform, with kinetic effect, well beyond our shores, to hold adversaries a long way away from Australia.
That's the only way to do it, do you?
This led us. And why do you think the United States has nuclear-powered submarines? If they didn't think that was the most important apex predator power in the world, they wouldn't have it either. I think we have to wake up a bit and understand that the insecurity we face in the Indo-Pacific is real, the adversary's intentions are real, and the only thing that
any of that,
and
it's
the only
how
thing
we
that's
actually
going to protect
spend
us
our money best to,
is how
to
we
rebut
deter.
Precisely that.
And I can tell you the one thing that has actually got our potential adversary in China to take notice in the last 5 years has been AUKUS. Why do you think they want to destroy it? Why do you think they want us to stop it? Why do you think they try and undermine it at every single opportunity? Because it is a capability that they know is incredibly powerful, and it demonstrates an alliance at work. That is what is going to avoid conflict in our region. So I would say that Australia, in accessing what no previous country other than the UK has been able to access in the most advanced defence capability to ensure that we have a strong defensive position in partnership with allies, it's the most important objective of government. And that's what this delivers.
You're listening to Global Roaming. It's Hamish here with Geraldine Doogue. Our guest is the former Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. And yes, we're talking about AUKUS. Scott Morrison, you're touching on something there, which is ultimately the changing shape of conflict. And whether we're looking at Russia and Ukraine or what's unfolding in Iran, drones have changed the game. And there are many Australians that are asking the question, not whether it's either or, but can we afford to actually arm ourselves and operate in these new types of conflict theatres when we are spending, what is it going to be, $370 billion?
Not in 1 year, by the way.
Sure. But it's an enormous amount of public money to go into these nuclear-powered submarines, which, as we're seeing particularly in the Middle East, you know, the big bits of military hardware don't necessarily help you win the war.
Yeah, but you've got to compare like with like, and you can't just move between theatres. Of course, autonomous weaponry, drones, etc., be they subsea or be they aerial or even increasingly terrestrial, of course all of those things are an important part of modern warfare. We have now seen territory taken for the first time with unmanned capabilities. That I think is a real hinge point. But these all also depend on platforms when you have to move from a long way away from where you're based. And so again, it's not a binary choice. the elaborate platforms are necessary, but so are the increasingly more tactical ones as well. And if, you know, you can't compare the Strait of Hormuz to the Indian Ocean. They're two very different propositions, or indeed the South China Sea. Now, the Taiwan Strait might be a different matter, or the Strait of Malacca might be a different issue when you're talking about those sort of autonomous vehicles. And that's why they have to be part of an integrated kit. But, you know, what we do if we're faced with conflict, you know, the whole idea is that Australia wouldn't face that on its own or in isolation. And it wouldn't be just with the United States. There are many other allies who we do exercises with, the Malabar exercise under the Quad. But we do that with India and Japan and Australia and the United States.
I can hear your aversion to binary choices, but when it came to going down the AUKUS pathway, it was a binary choice.
No, it wasn't, Hamish.
Well, you ditched the French option.
That's a binary choice between two similar platforms. That didn't say, oh, we're not going to have, fixed-wing aircraft, or we're not going to have rotary aircraft, or we're not going to have drones.
I want to go with this is if today you were looking at purchasing submarines from the French or the British, surely you wouldn't be choosing the British, right? The state of the British submarine production line and design sphere is a mess.
What you first decide is what you need. That's what matters.
But you must be worried about the UK dimension of AUKUS.
Well, I've made some comments on that. I mean, I think it's important that they lock this design down and they get building on the first boat to be outturned by the British, which then will transfer to the rest of the production here in Australia.
Because we can't build them unless they design them.
No one pretended that AUKUS wasn't a difficult project. Of course, it's a difficult project. What I object to is the suggestion that is sometimes made that somehow we shouldn't do this because Australia isn't up to it.
Oh, but surely is that really it? Isn't it more? And I mean, I've heard military people talking about this, that we've got a certain amount of money for defence, and clearly, you know, if you want to preserve peace, you prepare for war. I get that, but. The whole idea that whether we cannibalise the defence budget.
Well, I don't think we should.
But isn't there the risk? Even military people are worried about the risk of that.
And so am I. But that's a political decision of the government of the day.
But we can't have everything, can we?
I think we should be at 3% by 2030 and 3.5% by 2035. And I don't think that's an unreasonable trajectory given the threats we currently face. And I think that's a responsible decision to make those investments and thought somewhere in government. And had we remained in government, I have no doubt that that's the trajectory we would have moved to. And I don't think the defence budget, whether it's on sustainment or whether it's on recruitment or any of these on operations and so on for the Navy, should be diminished in order to support AUKUS. I don't think those things should be interchangeable. And the fact, to the extent that they are, well, I think that's a poor strategic decision and it should change. And, we should be prepared to make those investments as, you know, Germany has now decided to make and so many other countries who have woken up to all of this now understand they need to make. And frankly, the United States had said to the rest of the world, you know, they're sitting with a budget deficit of, what, 6% of GDP? We're sitting at a budget deficit of less than that. And we're having an argument about whether we can increase it by another 0.5% of GDP in the next few years and then another 0.5% on top of that. Well, if you're sitting there in the United States and you're going, well, hang on, we're providing for your defence at 6% deficit. It has come time for allies to be doing more of the burden sharing. Now, they've certainly said that to NATO, and to NATO's great credit, they have responded, and Australia needs to respond and continue to respond as the same request has been made of Japan and others.
So you feel comfortable with what is being asked of us and us changing things? If the $3 billion became $6 billion that we were plunging into their development so that we were sure that we'd get what we said we'd get, will that worry you?
Well, it's a complete hypothetical with no basis.
Well, I mean, in other words, how much more can it change? You say, look, it's dynamic. Of course it's dynamic. Now, how much more dynamic is going to be?
It's mission-driven and it's dependent.
That's very open-ended, isn't it?
Well, you need to be able to deliver on the mission. So if you can justify it on the basis of the mission and the security it delivers, then you make that judgment. That's what governments have to do. And governments have to make those choices. We had to make our choice. The current government has to make theirs. They're the assistants that are undertaken, whether it's at the Department of Defence or the Ministry of Defence in the UK or the Pentagon in the United States. And the important thing now is we're plugged in to a much bigger ecosystem. And we spent most of the time talking about submarines, which is understandable and fine, but the Pillar 2 elements of AUKUS are about ensuring that...
Well, you were very excited about that when you last came on the show.
I'm very excited about it. I was pleased to see the announcement on the weekend, and I look forward to there being a cadence of many more announcements. I'm pleased to see the fact that there's been a significant deregulation around ITARs and export controls in the United States. I mean, we achieved more as a result of AUKUS in deregulation, which was frustrating Australian defence industry being part of that bigger US market. We achieved more in about 2 years than we did in 50
Scott
because
Morrison,
of AUKUS.
What is Australia's plan B?
Well, this is where I think we have to be careful. I don't think we're going to need a plan B, because I think plan A is absolutely deliverable and must be, and we need to approach it in that fashion.
But we don't have a plan B, do we?
We have our defence capabilities that exist beyond submarines. That is true. The life of type extension of the Collins class, which is also getting a lot of scrutiny at the moment, which has been a challenge, frankly, for 30 years. I mean, we went through two governments before we came in 2013, where there was not a lot done on submarines up until 2013. And now we're in that phase of moving forward with the AUKUS submarine. So this is an issue that's been around for a while. But what I'm telling you is that diesel-powered submarines are going to be obsolete in terms of what Australians' requirements are. Now, that may not be the case for many other countries. It may not be the case for those in Europe or in other parts of Southeast Asia or so on, but for Australia and what we need to do and what is asked of us to be part of allied effort, which directly benefits us, then this is an elaborate capability which is very much in our interests. So it's something that we have to keep committing to and make happen. And this is what worries me about the defeatist attitude, which I often hear. It's all too hard for us. It's just all too hard. Can we just do something that's easier? But I'll tell you what will happen as a result of that. A, you'll have a diminished capability, unquestionably. And secondly, we would step back into a diminished tier of alliance. And I don't think that's in Australia's interest at all.
Can you say, though, honestly, that Australia is safer today strategically because of this arrangement for all its precariousness?
Yes.
How?
I just explained it to you with the immediate effect of what it means to our potential adversaries.
Even though this it doesn't exist. And we may never get the submarines.
Australia's defence is not just the things that it has, it's the friends it does it with. And the AUKUS,
and they're reliable, are they? You are quite confident?
Absolutely. Who would you suggest is more reliable than Australia's
Donald
partnership
Trump
with the United States and the United Kingdom?
Who? I suspect a lot of people listening would look at the United States today and say Donald Trump is not a reliable
This isn't
friend.
An argument about President Trump or Prime Minister Starmer or Prime Minister Albanese. I mean, the leaders of each of these countries have changed several times since this administration and through the natural processes of elections largely. And what AUKUS is multi-decade, multi-generational partnership. It's, and I remember describing it on the day we announced it, as a forever partnership. And it is. And that means, you know, leaders will come and go over that period of time and they will have stewardship responsibilities. And what I am seeing, whether it's in the United States or the UK, or indeed here, is a real commitment to deliver on this and an enthusiasm to deliver on it, which I think is very much in our shared interests. So much so that, you know, when King Charles chose to mention it in his speech to the Congress, I think that reminded everybody of the foundational relationship that we share between these three countries. And it helped, I think, be a binding element and a reminder to everybody that despite the differences that occur, we have a lot in common that we need to work together to protect and defend.
Global.roamingout. abc.net.au is the email address. Bring on the feedback. Scott Morrison, we appreciate you giving us this rigorous discussion on AUKUS.
Always happy to come and great to spend some time.
Thank you, Scott Morrison.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.